Hello and welcome, Ducks fans. Where and whenever you're watching or listening, this is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never-before-heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. Well, we're here releasing an episode a day earlier than anticipated because the University of Washington will not have enough scholarship players to represent the North in the Pac-12 championship. So, Sam, that means one thing. The Ducks have an opportunity still to win the Pac-12 championship, even though they weren't able to play against UW last week, and we have no football games to talk about or review. But you know what? I couldn't be happier, man. I'm excited.
It's a shame Oregon and Washington weren't able to figure it out on the field, but you know what? I'll take it. I will take it.
I think most Ducks fans will. I think a lot of people might be a little nervous about this game based on, you know, a couple games we've had already this season. But you know what? You just got to have an opportunity. And, you know, you never know what could make of it. If we could go ahead and pull this win off, I think it would be huge for the program. It'd be the right note to end the season on. And you get a chance to go to the Fiesta Bowl, and, you know, accelerate the brand and step it up a whole nother level. And, you know, the only way we get there is to try. So our quote this time is about persistence, Sam. It's persistence is to the character of man as carbon is to steel. Napoleon Hill said that. And, it took me a while to get what it means. Do you get it, Sam?
I think I've got a good handle on it, but you know what? Why don't you break it down for the people?
Well, you know, it's essential. That's the whole thing. Persistence is essential to the character of a football team too. And the only way the Ducks are going to have a chance at this championship is if they go out there and they give it their all and they give USC all the energy that they have this season. And you know, a bunch of those guys, those LA kids on this team, can't wait to go down and have an opportunity to show off in the Coliseum.
Fire from the area, I know that it's something that I would be really excited about, and I'm sure that it's an opportunity that so many of these young Ducks are looking forward to. Nick, before we go any further, you know I've got to get the essentials out of the way. Folks, follow Once a Duck at Once a Duck on Twitter and Instagram. Be sure to listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, because chances are we're probably there. You can follow Nick here at JustFollow61, follow myself at Samuel101TS. Nick is clearly rocking the awesome hat that he was recently sent. If you've got any Duck swag that you think you would like to see on the podcast, feel free to send it up to the Seattle studios to Nick or down to the Eugene studios to myself. And Nick, before we go any further, for once, I actually have a quote that I would like to bring to the episode today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? This whole season, you've been seeming to really take a lot from these quotes. You're finally done with finals down there in Eugene. And, you know, I'm ready for you to play teacher.
Well, it is a celebratory time for sure. As soon as fall term is over, that's always a good time. I know you can remember back to then how nice it was to be done for the winter. This quote, it's a simple one. I'll fight anyone at any time. That's the great Oscar Gutierrez. Do you know what his other name was, other pseudonym was for Oscar Gutierrez?
I didn't until I looked it up, Sam, but that's Mr. 619 Rey Mysterio. Quite the athlete there.
Quite the athlete. And as everybody knows, professional wrestlers of all kinds, especially those who have made it to the top of the WWF or WWE, are definitely athletes.
I'd qualify him, man. But, you know, we've got a real kind of a pro wrestling type matchup with these two big teams we're seeing on Friday, man. This is kind of the premier matchup. You know, the Pac-12 was hoping that they would get. Unfortunate, this is how it came. I would have loved the opportunity to prove ourselves against Washington, to earn this opportunity and to call ourselves the Pac-12 North champs. But hey, if we could go ahead and get that Pac-12 championship overall, that would be a nice consolation prize for not getting that UW game.
It would feel pretty great. And what I appreciate about Oregon is that Oregon is heading into this game humble, with their heads down, ready to fight. It's not like they're making Pac-12 North champion t-shirts or anything like that. It's not that, like, I would be concerned that Oregon would be stuck thinking about just having gotten this Pac-12 North title. That's not what's important right now. What's important right now is Oregon has a heavyweight bout in front of them. I appreciate you comparing this to wrestling, because that's kind of how I see this. This is going to be a fight. This is the two top teams in the Pac-12. This is your history and tradition versus your new age, your what's fresh, your what's clean, your what's brand new to the table. And over the last 20 years, that's been Oregon. USC has ruled the West for decades and decades and decades, or at least it seemed for a time, until now. Now Oregon is right there pushing at the top, and I think that what we've got is a really great matchup between the two premier powers in the Pac-12.
Well, and not only that, we have to see where, in recent big matchups between these teams, it's always had a lot on the line. And this one, it doesn't feel like as much because Oregon comes in with, a week where they didn't get to play. It feels like, they kind of got pushed in. And you hear a lot of USC fans already on Twitter complaining about, the inability to prep, having to already play UCLA, who played them really tough. I mean, Chip played them down to the wire a week before. But, it's going to come down to, can Oregon really embrace that heel spoiler role? Can they come in? Can they handle being the road dog for, the first time in a real test and get a true road win that's going to take everything they have? And, no fans in the stands, sure, it's great. But going on the road and learning to win on the road is tough, especially when you have to condense your schedule so much. As we know, Oregon just started practicing for USC on Monday night. I mean, I can't imagine what that's like as a player for a Friday game. When I played, the Pac-10 and Pac-12, I don't think the coaches and, with everything going on, no one would have allowed that. But I think we're so stuck right now of having to get that Friday contract game in with Fox that they had to push everything along. Because ideally, I would still like to see next, this week, essentially see Oregon play UW or whenever they're available and get that USC Colorado game out of the way. Because even though Colorado lost to Utah, man, I would have loved a chance to still see that game get made up and then have a legitimate determination of who the Pac-12 South champion and who the North champion is.
Well, in all of this mess, I feel pretty bad for Colorado because they had a pretty premier matchup lined up against Oregon. It was going to be a pretty great game for them. It was going to be the biggest national spotlight they were probably going to get all season, probably be the best look for the program overall to be able to get that game. And I feel bad that the program doesn't get that opportunity anymore. Now, does that mean that I would like Oregon to be playing them instead? No, I'm really happy Oregon's playing in the Pac-12 championship game. I'm really glad that on Friday night or the day after this drops, the day after you're probably listening to this, or it's maybe the same day, who knows, Oregon will be able to have an opportunity to play for the Pac-12 championship game against USC. Surprisingly, a matchup which actually hasn't occurred before, an Oregon-USC Pac-12 championship game. Only took us 9 years to get here, but it seems about right that we're finally there.
Yeah, and it's been funny because you were at last year's Pac-12 championship game, and that Utah game was one we went into, again, seemingly the underdogs, and quite a different experience that turned out happening. Oregon really came out, unleashed Justin Herbert in the run game, kind of a weapon we'd all been begging to see, and they came out, I guess, shocked everyone that wasn't us, because we were sitting here telling you, I think Oregon has a pretty good shot. And you know what? I think they could do it again, man. This team is going to have so much hype going down there. I have to bet that this team is way more fired up to play USC than they are Colorado. And again, you get to ruin a lot for USC if you pull this win off. I mean, it's going to hurt. They haven't been 5-0 since 2006. Even though it doesn't look like they have a shot at the playoffs, you can't tell me that that's not out of reason with all the craziness that could still happen in college football in 2020 and what's left. So, there's a lot on the line for them. And, this game has to mean everything to them. And for the Ducks, it has to mean that much more now.
Nick, you are so right when you say that, because this game, it's such an interesting position to be in, the position of spoiler. Mm-hmm. That's a very difficult spot to be in, because you know that you are the last line of defense before your opponent is able to reach their ultimate goal. I guarantee you that Oregon does not want USC to reach that ultimate goal. Oregon doesn't want USC playing in a New Year's Six bowl game, let alone the potential to play in a playoff game. There's no way. Oregon wants to seize that opportunity. I know we're going to get into our predictions and such later, but I have the same feeling you do. For some reason, I just feel as if this Oregon team can get something done. Last year, you were absolutely right. They were an underdog. But thanks to guys who we have actually had on the show, like Brady Breeze, Bryson Young, they were able to really bottle up Zach Moss. They were able to slow down the run game for Utah, and they were able to shut off the offense. It was really, really beautiful to watch how Oregon was completely able to hamstring Utah's offense last Pac-12 championship game. USC, they bring in some weapons for sure. They've got one of the best receivers in the Pac-12 in St. Brown. They've got a very, very capable quarterback in Slovis. I think that Oregon's going to have to really, really work their tail off to be able to stop these guys, but it could happen. If Oregon's offense can do what it was doing early in the year and we can see a defensive performance similar to what we saw against Cal, it could happen.
Well, I believe, Sam, and I believe from seen on the field. I believe more than just what I've seen from this USC team, which I already questioned seeing against Arizona State in the very first game of the season in a Bloody Larry 9 a.m. kickoff. I do not have a lot of faith in this USC team being all that they are hyped to be. And I also think the Ducks have another secret weapon on their side that, while some wanted to see it go, I'm bringing it back, Sam. Our friend at Mini Me Smitty 18 made Skoda a thing. And you know what, Sam? It didn't always go the right way. Over time, our feelings have changed a little bit, but I've got our very own Skoda representative right here. We're bringing it back just for good luck. And then, well, if we don't win the game, I'm taking him out back. We're getting rid of him, okay? But until now, we need him. We need him. Summoning his powers, channeling all that Grogu energy. Spoilers for those not watching Mandalorian. But I'm telling you right now, we've got good luck on our side. It's going to happen because Skoda's coming back. The Ducks are still playing for the Pac-12 championship despite all that's gone wrong this season. And you know what? Hopefully everyone passes protocol. Imagine the team we could be fielding this week if everyone's healthy. It sounds like Spencer Webb could finally be coming back this week. I saw him tweet out 1-0. And I would love to see him especially be 1-0 this week, because imagine coming out as a USC defense and all the tape you've seen in 2020 and a couple guys that haven't really popped out or shined yet just come out and just deliver the game of their life on Friday. It could happen, Sam. I'm believing. I'm believing right now.
First and foremost, Disney, please don't sue us. Please. Yeah, Oregon could absolutely find a way to get this done. I think that the Ducks will need to dig deep. I think that we're going to need to see some weapons utilized that have maybe not quite been there all season. One that comes to mind, CJ Verdell, he's had a down couple of weeks, but with a week off, a week to get healthy, perhaps a week to get together, I think that he's somebody who could have a really big performance against USC. I think if Oregon wants to win this game against the Trojans, one thing that they're going to have to do for sure, besides what we always say, and that's tackle, establish the run. Oregon's going to really need to establish the run, because when they're able to run the ball effectively, this Joe Moorhead offense works like a charm. It's beautiful. The RPO is gorgeous. When you get Shuck in those positions, whether or not he's choosing to throw or run, it's all made possible by a productive run game. And if Oregon can come out and punch USC in the mouth, they're going to be in a great position for the rest of the ball game.
Yeah, and one thing that's really encouraging for me is not just in the run game with CJ Verdell, but giving Tyler Shuck an extra week to heal from some of the hits and shots he took at the end of that Cal game. I mean, that's going to pay off, because as you saw in Cal, if you play an extremely aggressive defense, that quarterback has an opportunity in our run game to just pull it and get 7 to 10 yards every play. And if he can get down quick before that secondary, you know, defender comes to lay a shot on him, You can get even more yards if they still try to take that shot and you slide at the right time. So that can be a big play in this offense. And as we've seen, you know, against the years, you know, Dennis Dixon going right up the middle in 2007 comes to mind. USC plays incredibly aggressive. So if you can use that against them, as Oregon has been able to many times in the past, it's going to be a huge advantage for you. And, you know, I could see Shuck having a huge game in the rushing game. So, yeah, especially, you know, like you say, the RPOs too, that sets them up so much more, because the quarterback running the ball is going to just further suck up those guys trying to come lay a hit on him. And then boom, as soon as it looks like he's going to run, he dumps it off to a tight end and could be, you know, a big 40-yard play or touchdown. So it's been there a couple times this season and it's just a couple misses. But even then, you know, we've got a ton of other options. You know, Dye could have another great day running and receiving. Oregon's got to have a lot of weapons that I bet that USC defense is very nervous about. Now, on the other side, what we have to be nervous about is this defense has not gotten enough turnovers this year and the offense has not held onto the ball enough. And that's going to be a huge key against USC, because that's where they win the game. If you saw all the momentum plays that they had against UCLA, you know, those are things that are generated off turnovers and big plays. And if Oregon gives any of those up, you know, USC could catch a lot of momentum quick.
Nick, this is something that I've been curious about. I've been thinking about it the last couple of days. I didn't ask you before the show because I wanted to save your genuine reaction for right now. I'm really curious to see whether or not Joe Moorhead opens up that playbook a little bit more this week. I know that it's his first year with the program. Sometimes in that first year, you're just trying to establish yourself. You're not really trying to do anything crazy, just get the offense working in place. But I would want to know from your perspective, from how you see things, what are the chances you think that Oregon actually will open up the playbook a little bit more and get a little bit more creative in this Moorhead system?
Well, I mean, if there's any time to do it, you know, to quote the Waterboy, one of my favorite games, last game of the year, Brent, can't hold anything back now. So as far as Oregon knows, with how crazy the bowl season is, it looks like if Oregon wins, they could go to the Fiesta. If they lose, they could go to the Alamo, or who knows. At this point, you have to think this is the last chance you might have with this entire team. Who knows what decisions guys are going to have to make personally when it comes to bowl season. This is your last chance to really go and open it up this season. And especially if we do have a big bowl game like the Fiesta Bowl, you show a bunch of stuff and you give whoever you're coaching against for those 4 weeks a whole lot of nightmares to look at on tape. So I'd love to see it opened up a bit. I'd love to see, you know, not just I love the RPO game as is. Again, I wouldn't change very much in that. Just it would be great if we could have, you know, it feels like we're going into games with just, you know, one healthy tight end sometimes. Like this team has been more decimated by COVID than we've been led on to believe, because, you know, it just now is making sense as we look, and Mario Cristobal says there's weeks where, you know, they've been under that 50 player scholarship limit, and it's just, you know, yeah, close to it. But I mean, you have to imagine that with what we've seen with injuries, and what they want to, you know, what they haven't necessarily said about injuries and guys that haven't been able to get playing time, you know, it we haven't been playing with a full roster out there this season. Maybe everything just comes together this week, and that helps the offense open up more than the play calling.
That would be excellent to see, I am sure. Another thing, the defense, we talked about a little bit, they're gonna have to be able to create turnovers. It's without a doubt, you can't win the football game if you're not able to get a hold of the football. And this season, the Oregon defense has really struggled to get a hold of the football. There were a couple of turnovers in that UCLA game, but besides that, it's been really, really hard to come across for the Ducks. What does this Oregon defense have to do to be able to get their hands or heads on the ball a little bit, be able to create some opportunities to get the offense some more looks?
Well, Keaton Slovis only has 4 interceptions this year, and a lot of that out of the air raid is scheme-based. So if you can get everyone spread out, you know, have those big crossing routes and mixed with those large fades that keep the defense honest and spread out, you know, it's going to be tough to force those turnovers unless you get after the quarterback in the pocket. If he has all day to figure out who's open and, you know, what our defense is, you got to confuse the looks first and foremost. There's times that's really difficult for Oregon, because when you're playing with guys that are inexperienced or backups or injured, for whatever reason, those guys aren't going to be as familiar. So you're going to have to run more base defenses. You're not going to be able to get as many exotic packages out there, or, you know, different personnel groupings that might confuse the offensive looks. So what you have to rely on is talent and aggression. And sometimes that just means bringing more people to the quarterback than they can handle. And, you know, if Oregon could do that a couple times when they aren't expecting it, get Slovis uncomfortable early, that could lead to some turnovers more than, you know, necessarily even a great play by a DB. I think it's going to be a lot more about getting pressure right up front. I would love to see Fat Mac get back there a couple times in that last Cal game. You're like, oh, he's chasing the quarterback, he's going to get him, and just not enough quarterback able to roll out. I think a lot of that has to do with the outside edge guys collapsing the pocket inwards. And man, if we could just get that pocket to collapse nice and early and make their quarterback nervous and cut that, you know, that throw time down a second or two, it's going to do big things in terms of being able to force turnovers.
And you hit the nail on the head right there. I was just going to reference that defensive unit as well, specifically the defensive line. Guys like Thibodeau, Scott, both Faliu brothers, Mace Funa, Brandon Dorless, excuse me. These are guys that have to be able to get to the quarterback. They have shown flashes throughout the season for sure. But if I would have told you going into this week that, hey, Kayvon Thibodeau would have racked up his first sack 2 weeks ago, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the only one on the season so far. Is that something that you would have expected? Or is it something that with a shortened season, you have to anticipate that it's going to take time, and that for some of these guys, they're just not able to get the amount of reps necessary to be able to pull off those plays?
Yeah, well, for Kayvon in his sophomore season, I think a huge factor that even he'll say himself is that those first couple games coming into the season, he was a huge focal point for offenses. And offenses knew that if they were going to have a chance that day, they couldn't let him get started and get rolling. So he's certainly seen a fair amount of double teams, particularly when he's been lined up in that four eye position, like we've talked before. It just invites the guard tackle double team or the slide your way. So a lot of times, just schematically, he's either been going into a slide side protection, which means you have the center, guard, and tackle all looking your way in case, and that takes away the spin move or that quick inside adjustment, because as soon as you do, boom, the guard's right there just licking his chops, ready to pop you in the chest. So for him, it's definitely been his impact has been more about bringing blockers towards him and freeing up other guys. Unfortunately, it's been in so limited where those guys have been put in opportunities that they can make that play. And even then, when they have, we've had some unfortunate missed tackles in the backfield where it's felt like Oregon could stop something for 2-3 yard loss, and then it's a net 7 yard gain.
And I think these are a lot of plays that you see from young guys. I know one guy that comes to mind is Noah Sewell. He's had a really outstanding freshman year by so many accounts. But at the same time, how many times have we seen a missed tackle in the backfield or just an arm tackle that would bring down a guy in high school, but would have brought somebody down last year? But it's just going to take an adjustment. And remember, these are college guys. Everybody's more on the same page at this point, more at the same ability, skill, physicality level. Therefore, it's going to take a little bit more of you to bring somebody down in the backfield in such a manner. I think that arm tackling is something that we've seen so much out of this Duck team this year, and it's been something that's been not super beneficial at times. I think that if this Oregon team is really going to step up what they're doing this week against USC, part of it's going to have to be wrapping up finishing tackles and getting guys down in the backfield, as you mentioned.
Well, and on the opposite side, the Oregon offensive line is going to have to be a cohesive unit because USC defense has gotten after the quarterback this year. I think I've counted 14 total sacks. Their leading sack guy has 3.5, but they've got a bunch of guys that have 2 sacks this season. And, that's always been pretty consistent against the USC teams I've played personally. They've always just had some stellar guys out there for the Pac-12. You usually see those types of physical athletes in the SEC along those defensive lines, the guys that just seemingly have it all. And in a year like this, that's the whole reason Cal couldn't play. They ended up coming down to two defensive linemen last week, and they have to end their season with, no game at all against Arizona after that cancellation. So when you have a D line that's as productive as USC's, I think that's been a huge key to them just being able to have the success and go 5-0 this year.
It has been, and I think that's something that USC definitely has going for them. It's something that Oregon's going to have to work to deal with a lot. I think that if Oregon is able to keep Shuck alive and somehow also able to procure a run game, that Oregon's going to have a really legitimate shot in this ballgame. I think that it is absolutely correct to look at Oregon as the underdog here, but I don't know what that really means. I don't know what that means besides the fact that USC is a better record at this point. Oregon is as talented a team as you'll find on the West Coast. And with that talent and the proper coaching, which we know Oregon has, there's a chance. There's always a chance.
Definitely. Yeah, and the other thing is you say it's the most important note I think we can hit on. All you need is a chance. That's all Oregon can ask for. I'm very glad that this chance wasn't handed down to UW. I'm very glad that if they weren't able to come down to Eugene and take it from us, that at least Oregon gets a shot, because, man, this is really the game we've all wanted this season. And to still get it, I think that's the one thing the Pac-12 hasn't quite screwed up. They've screwed up quite a few things along the way on this, but here we are at the end of the season. Everything we wanted is still in front of us. There's still that opportunity, and the only thing that stands in front of us is USC. And given the Ducks teams I've seen play USC over the years, I feel really good about that.
I do as well. And since you referenced a movie earlier, Nick, I'll reference a movie right now. It's one of my favorites of all time. And this quote is brought to you by our good friend Lloyd, who had to tell us, "So you're telling me there's a chance?" And oh, there is a chance this week. Just like there was a chance for Lloyd and Dumb and Dumber to maybe have a shot with Mary, Oregon's got a chance this weekend. So you're telling me there's a chance.
Well, Sam, I don't know if you're trying to say we're the dumb and dumber of Oregon podcast, but I gladly accept. That's right up our alley for what we like to bring you on the show. And we're so glad you guys have been out there. I mean, the reactions on Twitter to our last episode have been awesome. We are really thankful you guys were able to stick along with us, even though we recorded an entire Husky Hate Week episode that will be postponed a year in terms of carrying over that Husky Hate Week and, you know, another 365 solar days without a UW win over Oregon in football. So we have that to look forward to. But man, also, how great was it Saturday to see the Ducks at least get one win over the Huskies on the basketball court?
It felt great. It felt great. It was good to see an Oregon win. It felt really nice. I know that I'm oversimplifying it by just saying it felt nice, but it did. It was a really good feeling just to see Oregon walk into Seattle, take care of business. I know that that's a game that you probably would have loved to have been at, Nick, but unfortunately with the empty stands, we all had to be comfortable watching it. I was very comfortable watching it, although Eugene Omorui was definitely in some foul trouble at times, didn't see the floor as much as we've come to expect of him. The rest of this Duck team, I think, played really, really well. Chris Duarte was taking some shots that I was glad to see him taking. And this entire team is starting to gel together, I think, really, really well. They're bringing in a new guy who's fresh on campus here coming up in the next couple of weeks. I think that Oregon's basketball team is in a very, very good place right now. Dana Altman teams usually take a little while to come together and start figuring it out. It's not often until January or February that we see something really exciting. I know that 2 years ago when Oregon made the Sweet 16, that team looked terrible until March. They looked like a terrible basketball team until late February, early March. To have a Dana Altman team coming together early in the year as they are this season, it is a really, really good thing to see.
Yeah, and you know, I tried to sneak in with the Duck over there at American Airlines Arena on Saturday. They wouldn't let me in. Tried to tell them it was my birthday. I should have been allowed. They wouldn't let me in, and you know, I expect nothing less from the Huskies than a lot of hate back towards me. But you know what? Carried on, went home, watched the game from home, and man, it was so much fun because, yeah, we dominated them most of the game. It felt like we had the game in hand. Like seeing a Dana Altman team not only start Pac-12 play this early, but feel like they had a real control of the game. Now, got a little nervous late. Things got, you know, when it comes down to having to make a three-pointer, you know, you definitely lost control of that game at some point. But, man, to be able to see them respond and put it away, I mean, whew. I was excited about this team already. And the only unfortunate thing now is we have no idea who they're really playing next. We know that UCLA is scheduled on the 23rd, but hopefully Oregon can spur up some kind of competition, find somebody eligible and COVID safe. And we can get a couple more games in here before conference play really gets rolling.
I would love to see a couple more games, Nick. I can tell you that Oregon against Washington, they had a good ball game. And what I really liked about this ball game, it wasn't anybody in particular who took over. Last year, you were there. You can say that was the Peyton Pritchard show. That was his day to shine. He was the one doing all for the Ducks. On Saturday, though, it was a much different story. Chris Duarte, who I mentioned, 14 points. Eugene Omorui, 14 points. Eric Williams Jr., 13 points. Nafali Dante, 12 points. Right there, you have great production from four of your five starters. Everybody playing really well together. That's exactly what I'd love to see from this Oregon basketball team. And Nick, the men weren't the only team to have a game this past weekend. The women did as well. They took down Oregon State 79-59 in blowout fashion. I watched this game and I can tell you at no point did I feel insecure about this ball game. The Ducks really did dominate.
Yeah, they rolled. And then it was really nice seeing Prince back in there without, you know, knowing that, you know, she'll be healthy, even though she didn't get the start. Seeing her work in is encouraging because, man, this team is so loaded. I thought last year's team was loaded, but we really went down or went up to Corvallis and you know, the game, I won't call it the, make sure I didn't say it, almost called it the thing we don't say anymore, but the Platypus Cup in basketball or the game or whatever we're going to be calling it, that it was not the same sold out game we saw last year in more ways than one. I mean, it was weird seeing, you know, no fans there for, you know, last year, what was not just a big game, but such an emotional game with Kobe passes passing right before that, and Sabrina, you know, giving the speech right before the last time they played in Corvallis. I mean, I had a lot of memories back to that day until it tipped off, because you saw entirely new attitude, and particularly, you know, for Oregon State. I mean, I know they went into that ranked number 15, but definitely wasn't the same Oregon State team we're used to. I know they lost a lot of really talented players too, but it was great seeing the women's team so, I mean, just mid-season form already.
They looked so incredibly good, and what Kelly Graves has built in Eugene is really truly special. He took a program that was, well, to be honest, relatively forgotten, and turned it into a national powerhouse in 4 to 5 years. That is incredibly impressive.
Yeah, and the things, not how he's doing it and where it's at now, you know, we've said it before, the 5-5-star recruits is already unfathomable, but you just see the team that he puts out there and some of the shots they're making. If you aren't watching this women's basketball team, like, as a Duck fan, shame on you, because, I mean, it's like watching Steph Curry out there with some of these threes, like the step back jumper, you know, from way beyond the arc in the women's game is a fun thing to see. And especially when it's not even touching rim. And, you know, there were a few of those, and it felt like, you know, the first half, what we had almost double digit three pointers. I mean, this is a team that, oh, doesn't matter what your knowledge of basketball is, if you love sports and just seeing good competition, they just say play so crisp and together. Oh, it's great basketball to watch. And I already had a feeling, you know, when they come out the first game of the season, they're already going to put up over 100 on the board, that this could be something special. But man, every game we get to see more of them, and the development of this team, it just reinforces that.
Development is key. This team did bring in 5 5-star recruits. As impressive as that is, you still have to be able to develop that talent. And it looks like that process is underway for Kelly Graves and his staff.
Well, that, and finally getting to showcase the talents of Aaron Boley and Taylor Chavez and a lot of people that have sat there behind some really talented people and still contributed huge in games. But now they're getting to kind of take that star role and, you know, be depended on in key moments, and including being depended on is Sabali's sister is going to be something really special too.
She was already a gold medalist and an MVP for the German national team.
Yeah.
Already. This was a couple of years ago. So as the great Michael Jordan once put it, the ceiling is the roof.
I'm telling you, I watch that drop step and she has more force than me when I'm at like 300 pounds trying to pull around a guard, you know, you just see that drop step and it's just down. I remember she had one right across the paint once or twice where I was just, wow, that reaction, that fast twitch on such, you know, a tremendous athlete. Oregon has not, when I went to women's basketball games in my time, that's not the recruits we were bringing in. And props to Kelly Graves, because, you know, that's a level of commitment and excitement you generate around your program that very, very few women's programs have.
Nick, I don't know if I could agree with you any more than that. And besides that, I think that we're ready for our guest.
Yeah, man. And oh, the best part is this guy is going to be one of the best people to get us ready to talk about USC. Okay, so normally I introduce our Once a Duck guest, but as someone that's technically a return guest and was featured on our previous Happy Hour episode, which you can go back and watch on YouTube, and also because since then he has some podcasting experience of his own. Darian Weems, why don't you introduce yourself and what you're podcasting right now?
Darian Weems is my name. Me and Mackie have a podcast. I don't know, for all the like real Duck faithful out there, they'll know Mike Mackie. We're just talking about like heterodox ideas, man. Nothing too crazy. But I'm Darian Weems, class of don't even know, right? I know my last game was Rose Bowl 2012, maybe 2000, yeah. Rose Bowl 2012, you know, go Ducks. Once a Duck.
Darian, that's a heck of a last game to be able to reference. As Nick mentioned before we got started, we did do a little bit of research today, which is a little bit unusual for us, but we wanted to make sure we came prepared. Something that we dug up when we were doing a little bit of research was that when – it came down to the schools you were choosing. You were favoring Oregon or USC. And if I could just quote you really quick, USC is USC, and you'd be a fool to turn them down. I'm just kind of curious if your thoughts on that have changed at all, how you feel about the Trojans still, and what kind of connections you have with that program.
Well, my best friend went to USC. His brother went to USC. My uncle went to USC. I have long lines with the Trojans. I still think, like, you know, great program, great school. Obviously, I went in a different direction, right? I chose to come on up to Eugene, become a Duck, and, you know, get going on the things that we got started there. But, yeah, I don't even know how to answer that question, right? I've got some deep USC roots. I, you know, per your research there, I didn't realize that I was down to Oregon and USC. I'm trying to think if that's actually what it was, or if I just fucking told some guy that in the media because it was like cool to say at the time. But I remember, like, I really wanted to go to Oregon. I thought about USC. I thought about going to Florida. I thought about, like, I really wanted to go to Miami for some reason. I remember, like, but Miami didn't offer me. But if Miami would have offered me, I might have took that serious. But, yeah, man.
Now, to quote you directly to this guy you talked to with Rivals, you said, "When you get an opportunity to go to a college like that, you almost have to take it," Weems said. "The school is really prestigious, and it's right in the middle of everything in Los Angeles. That's the place to be." And what's crazy about that to me is because you came in and you didn't have the same path as most LA Ducks did to Eugene. You had such a different life experience and culture coming into our offensive line meeting room. And when we first roommated for that last fall camp, actually in the dorms, you know, I remember first meeting you and thinking you were such a funny guy. And then I started realizing, like, how passionate you were about football. When did you develop that passion for football? And when did you decide to take it to Eugene?
Honestly, I didn't play football until like my sophomore year of high school. I cared about the game so much as, like, when I lived in New Orleans, because before I moved back to Los Angeles, I lived in New Orleans. And there was a time when I was a freshman where I would be walking through the halls and, like, the high school coach would say, "Hey, man, you have to play football," right? And then all the players would be like, "Hey, man, you have to play football. You have to come. You have to be a part of the team." And so after, you know, many, many weeks of that, I just decided, fuck it. Let me go, like, try football. Show these guys, you know, that maybe I'm not good at it, but I ended up being all right, you know. And so that's that piece.
Darian, another thing that we came up with while researching your life a little bit was the reason that you had to move to Los Angeles from New Orleans was reading here because of Hurricane Katrina. That's something that happened over 15 years ago at this point, but I was still kind of curious what kind of an impact that disaster had on you at a young age.
Well, I'm from Los Angeles originally. Like, I was born out here, Cedar Sinai. Lived in the valley, kind of back and forth with my mom. But, you know, living in New Orleans, I lived there for probably 6-7 years. And leading up to that, I kind of fell in love with the place, loved the people, loved just like the vibe that, you know, there is out there. Whenever the hurricane hit, it was kind of a sad thing. You know, it was sad for me in the same way that it was sad for many other people. You know, people kind of got super displaced. I remember we had already played our first game that year. We played Isadore Newman, which is kind of like where Peyton Manning and Archie and Eli went. And so we played them in like a jamboree. I mean, we were kind of gearing up for our season, and then the hurricane hits and it's kind of like, no, that all of that's done, bro. You're actually going to move couple thousand miles across the country and you're gonna go play for this team that with guys that you've never met before. So, you know, I think it was a tragedy, obviously. You know, I haven't spent much time thinking about it and, you know, ruminating on it, but like, I think you know, it was a tragedy for me in the same way that it was a tragedy for many people. But it did kind of create a whole bunch of opportunity. I don't think I would have gotten recruited the same had I not went to the high school that I ended up going to, which was Taft High School in Woodland Hills, right? I think, you know, that kind of gave me the opportunity. Like, I might not have gone to Oregon if I wouldn't have gone to Taft. So, you know, I think all these things are kind of happening for a reason there, you know?
Yeah, when I first came to Oregon, and as I mentioned earlier, the you know, we really got shackled up there that first fall camp. I came in, and I just remember learning how tough you were very, very quickly those first couple days, because going into your second year, man, Coach Greatwood was so tough on you. It was almost like you were the guy I'd always learned from, because if anybody was going to get yelled at for something first, those first couple of years, it was going to be you. How did you endure that, and how did it shape you into the player that you ended up becoming?
I mean, I think I, you know, ended up being a solid player. I think I really appreciate Greatwood for just like kicking my ass like that. I don't think people realize, you know, like there's this whole like subculture of like motherfuckers wanting to be soft and shit, and I don't think how much people realize how important it is for you to like endure something and to have someone at your ass every day to change your mentality. It's so important, because I was fucking lazy and I didn't want to work hard, and like there was all this shit that I had going on in my mind about my past and about shit that I couldn't control, that I was letting control my life. And you know, what Coach Greatwood did was he shocked me, my whole system, and made me give a fuck about kind of what we're doing here today now. And that kind of, you know, and working hard and like appreciating what it means to be in an offensive line room. I don't think people realize like how, like the dynamics of an offensive line room, right? There's just so much happening there. There's so many different people, but there's also like a type of person that's in there more often than not. And, you know, I think, you know, he did exactly what he told me he was going to do, right? I was getting recruited by a lot of people, and I remember he told me, hey, if you come to Oregon, I'm going to kick your ass, you're going to redshirt, and it's going to be difficult, you know? And when I committed, I guess I committed to that as a fucking thesis for what my life was going to be in college, right? Like, there were plenty of places that were recruiting me, and they called me the fucking franchise and said that I would start 50 games and like I'll be playing from day one, but I, you know, on some level knew myself and knew that that wasn't even really what I wanted, and that I needed kind of a, you know, a difficult route. And I'm super appreciative to Coach Greatwood for that. Like, I don't know if I developed that like toughness at least in within the game without him doing those things, you know, without making me roll before and after practices, and without like just making it a point to make me a fucking guy, you know. Like, I feel like I owe a lot to him in many ways. So
definitely,
Darian, you had the opportunity to play on a handful of very successful teams there at Oregon. You were lucky enough not to see a whole lot of losses in your time, and I know that's something that Duck fans definitely appreciate from that group that you came. I think that one thing that I'm definitely curious about, and I ask Nick this all the time, and I love being able to ask guests who played in that era the same thing. What were some of those different years? How did they feel different? How did the style of play or just the mentality of the team change year to year while you were there? What was it like to be a Duck at that time?
I think, I mean, I can talk about my time there and the messaging that I got from recruiting to being a senior at the University of Oregon. I remember being recruited there and Bilotti was the head coach. And, you know, I went there because of Greatwood and because I believed that he was gonna singularly make me, and he cared enough to make me a decent player. I remember Bilotti being the head coach and, you know, we were doing okay, but there was a lot that we could have done better, right? There was a lot of, trying to find a appropriate way to phrase it, but like there was a level where certain shit was okay, right? Like certain ways of being and types of playing was kind of okay. And I remember whenever Chip became the head coach, it, you know, it just, these things weren't okay anymore, right? It wasn't okay to like not be about the team kind of first and foremost. I think that's why you saw a lot of guys get kicked off of the team kind of around that time frame, a lot of guys that kind of weren't super bought into the message. And then it just kind of raised the standard, Chip did, of what Oregon football meant and what we wanted it to mean, essentially, right? Like, I remember my class in particular, you know, we just you know, and I had many conversations with a guy like Walter Thurman, right, who I considered to be kind of like the heartbeat of like some of those teams, right? And it was all about competition. And I remember whenever Chip became the head coach, it became more about that competition, right? And I'm, you know, everyone knows Win the Day now, but that was like I remember the first meeting, he walks in and he says, like, it's about Win the Day. It's about everything that we do is about how we essentially like make every day more efficient, like getting 1% better, right? And I think, you know, over the term of 36 months, right, 4 years, like that became something that was super powerful. And that, like, because once you, it's the culture. Like, I think what most people miss about sports is, like, no matter really how good like the individual players are, like, it has more to do with the culture and the types of things that are okay versus the types of things that are not okay, and the types of ways that you're going to compete versus you know, not competing. And I feel that those teams did a really good job of competing and made it personal, right? Like, I remember making it personal many, many times that we were going to be good, or we were going to win this game, or we were going to, you know, set, like, achieve whatever goal we had kind of set out for ourselves. And many people were like that, right? I think most of the leadership of those teams, it was about competing more than anything, right? And so I think, you know, the culture of competition is kind of what elevated us to a level there, right, for those teams. So
yeah. And you mentioned that senior class you were part of, and not only getting to, you know, walk away from the Oregon team with a Rose Bowl championship, but the inaugural Pac-12 championship. As we find Oregon going into play you know, in this crazy 2020 season and have another shot at another Pac-12 championship, you know, what is it like to be able to claim that kind of first championship with that group of guys?
I mean, it's cool. We won the first inaugural. We won 3 straight, you know, Pac-10/Pac-12 championships, you know, and that was like something to be really proud of, I think, at the time, right, when we were doing it and when we were there, because, you know, at that time it was more like USC is the dominant team in the conference, right? And, you know, us being able to, you know, elevate ourselves and put ourselves kind of at that level where we played in 3 straight BCS bowl games, and, you know, we won a lot more games than we lost. You know, just felt good overall, you know. So,
moving ahead a little bit, you now have an Oregon team that's back in contention after a lull for a few years. You've got a team that is consistently pushing for national recognition, consistently pushing for a top 25 spot, if not a top 10 spot. When you look at this Oregon program, 10 almost years removed from when you were last there, what does the program now look like to you? What does it look like to be an Oregon Duck now as opposed to when you were at the university?
I mean, I think it looks a lot the same. I think that, how is it different? I don't know how different it is, right? I think, you know, there's always the allure of like the jerseys and the facilities and things of that nature. But after that, it's just about going out and winning and competing, you know? And I think that they do a pretty solid job of going out and competing. Like, I don't watch every game, right? I catch them every now and then. And, you know, from what I've seen, those kids go out, they compete, you know, they play their hardest, which is really all you can ask for from, you know, college football team. And, you know, to take that kind of that energy into the future, right? Because it's all just fucking inertia. So, you know, take that energy that got created, like, you know, the energy of like a Dennis Dixon era that we then took into another era that then, you know, you just hope that the ball kind of keeps rolling in that way. And it seems to be rolling. So,
well, Darren, you talked about the guys it takes in the offensive line room, and, you know, you talked about a little bit about, you know, the different personalities that it takes, not only there, but the leaders you had on that senior team of yours. Well, we're about to bring on another senior leader and another former Once a Duck podcast guest. We've got Mark Asper here. I think he's got a question for you. See, we do some prep work around here, Darren. Once in a while.
Asper, man, what's going on? I was actually just driving through Idaho, and that is genuinely God's country.
I'm no more than 30 minutes from anywhere in Idaho. You couldn't call.
I'm sorry. We went to Yellowstone with my son. It's COVID. You don't know how people are feeling. You know, I can't, like, I wasn't going to hit you up, you know, like.
And even Yellowstone. Oh, even Yellowstone. We could have had Amari over. He could have met the girls. Come on.
Next time, man. I plan on spending more time out in that direction. So no biggie. Good to see you, though.
Always, brother. Always. Mm-hmm.
So while we've got the group here, we were talking about it a little later. What is the kind of chemistry that it takes to have a functional O-line and a really good looking O-line like we had that 2012 year?
I think on some level hierarchy is key, right? There's like a level where, you know, it's like an older way of doing things, an older style of doing things, you know, it's like seniority. And hold on, my wife's walking in to grab something. Throw that at her. Sorry, babe. I don't know who that is, too. I love you. A good offensive line room takes, like, people melding together, right, and becoming one. Like, Asper's from Idaho Falls, right, the Bonneville Bees, drove past your stadium, right? I grew up in, like, inner city environments, and we were able to become the same person somehow, right, and on some levels, and find a way to, like, be together and fight for the same shit. Like, that's what our offensive line room is about.
Yeah, I think it's a group of dudes that come in, you know, sorry to throw the coach speak around on it, but a bunch of dudes that come in and abandon their own, not totally, but check their ego, abandon your own identity and your own kind of priorities and your own maybe selfish ambitions or goals, and say, you know what, whatever is good for the group is good for me. Mm-hmm. And that, to what, you know, what Darian spoke about, is you become somewhat of the same person on so many things. And, you know, I think I tell people all the time, it was shocking to me to get to, like, when I got to the NFL and I've moved around to a bunch of different teams, when you go to one team to another, we're like clones. Like, you meet the O-line room, they're all the same. You go to one team to another and it's like the same dudes. You're like, oh, that's that guy. Oh, that's that guy. But we're all so similar. We're all the same dudes, because to be successful play at that high level and to be successful like we were, you have to abandon that. An O-line cannot function with individual priorities or individual motive. It all has to be a group of people committing to the group.
Absolutely. Like, the left tackle could kick someone's butt, but if the center, you know, doesn't have it figured out, then we all lose, right? Four guys could have it figured out. If one guy doesn't have it figured out, we all lose. And I think that's like almost the opposite of what is happening everywhere else on the field, right? Like, one defensive lineman can flash, make a play, and it's like, oh, that was amazing. You just helped everyone. Like, thank you. But unless all five offensive linemen are going in the same direction with the same mentality, you know, it's not going to be a good looking play 9 times out of 10. So
unless you got LaMichael back there, do you recall we were playing Cal, and ooh, I remember distinctly we ran like our horn, like our tackle, you know, that pulling guard. We were told to run that play to the right. We all ran play to the right, and LaMichael and Darren ran the play to the left, and we scored. It was our first score of the game. It was like a 40-yard
touchdown. I know exactly what you're talking about.
We get to the side, and everyone, and you know, Stephen G is like, "What the flip was?" We're like, "Dude, he said right." We ran it to the right, and he's like, well, maybe that's how we need to run it from now on, because
just the deception.
Just get out of his way and let LaMichael do his thing, right?
Yeah, 100%. It helps when you got a special guy.
But I guess to that same point, we all did it wrong. Like, it was so convincing, because all five dudes sold out hard run reach to the right, and they were like, wait, what?
It's run to the right. We got to stop this thing. Up the left side, 47 yards, touchdown. And that might have been the first play of the game, too, if I remember. It may have been.
It was the first drive. I do remember that.
Yeah. So
I think it was first drive, but yeah, we were kind of sputtering. We weren't banging like we were supposed to. Mm-hmm. And then that happened and we're like, oh hey.
Sometimes you need that though, you know, you need a little misdirection, get the thing going.
Gentlemen, just a little background. I was able to do a bit of research right there. Yeah, 53-yard touchdown, second play of the ball game.
There it is. There it is. On the wrong play.
It was always some against Cal, too. I mean, shit, even this year, it was like Oregon always just have trouble either going down there and even at home a couple games, just the way their defense always played. And then even the way, yeah, some plays on our end like that, only against Cal.
Yeah, I played one of my worst games there that year when I got hurt and then Cliff ran a punt back like really late in the game. That was arguably one of the toughest games I think I've ever played. Cam Jordan was just a beast. There was some other random like guy who didn't show up in the scouting report that was all right, and I was like, this is different, guys, we got to get it together.
Yeah, they always had different D, and it was always like they had one or two NFL D line guys that even if you didn't know their names that season, that next season when they were in the league, you were like, oh, okay. That's why my forearms still hurt. So yeah. So speaking of a lot of those talented NFL guys, I want to know from each of you, just pick one special NFL talent that was on your team that just blew your mind, that you, if you would have seen in Oregon, like it would have been one of those guys in the meeting room we're flipping on, like, oh my God, what are we going to do this week?
From a defensive perspective or?
Any perspective.
So you're for a D lineman that we played against or was on our.
Can be, like go for it, free for all. Space is yours.
Well, I know Darian and I both got to spend some time in Denver, so we both got a taste of Mr. Miller, Von Miller. He was a freak show to try to deal with. And I shared the story last time I was on here about what I call my longest day at the office, because we had Von Miller on one end, we had DeMarcus Ware at the other book, you know, and we were doing one-on-one pass rush, and I got lucky. I sold out on him to spin inside, so I like hard three kick, just baited him, and he spun back. I caught him with his back turned, and I ran him back to the line. Boom.
Beautiful.
And then left tackle was like, Asper, let's see if you can go 2 for 2. I went left tackle, and I was baiting on DeMarcus, giving me the long arm. So he goes to stab that, and I chop it down, put his face in the dirt. Oh. I felt so good about myself. And then the D-line coach is like, this effing guy, we're paying him minimum. And you mother effers, we're paying $60 million a year. You better remember. Anyway, I got Sunday night American game, third down, twist, stunt, pick, ISO. I got every hot shot move those dudes had the rest of the day, and got lit up and RPK'd and
the whole nine.
Office, but those two were just and like Mario Williams. I went against that freak show in when I was in Buffalo every day, and Hughes. So we had three. And when I was a rookie, that was I think the biggest whoa. Well, I was a rookie in Buffalo. We had Mario Williams, we had Kevin Williams, and we had Jerry Hughes and freaking Darius
Space. And that was before name. Jerry caught on too. Like Jerry was kind of like an underknown guy.
Look, yeah, we all knew what Jerry was all about. Yeah. But he wasn't all that, because they had freaking Mario and Kevin, Pro Bowlers, and then they had Darcell in there just running the freak show. But it was all four of those dudes, Pro Bowl dudes. That was the starting D line. And it was like, all right, Asper, go try to block
these guys all day every day.
Yeah, lock them up. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think for me, it's definitely Vaughn's definitely one of them. I watched Khalil Mack throw down like a crazy 5-sack performance one day that led me to believe that he's probably like, I probably wouldn't have wanted to see him very much on the edge, you know, like he had everything, speed, power, moves, he could bend really well, right? But it was like Vaughn was a guy for me, and ironically enough, DeMarcus Ware, but when he was in Dallas with me, like he was, that was really the time when I saw like a guy from a defensive side of the ball, like really that had a, like a, was so studious of the game, but not like X's and O's, but like, hey, usually when guys have their fingertips in the grass like this, this happens. Like, don't get yourself caught in that rhythm, right? And it's like, oh shit, I wasn't even thinking about that. Like, thank you, D-Ware. You know, thanks, D-Ware. Or he'll be like, I remember one time, like we're going through, it's like one of the third down periods, you know, twice. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, how are you getting such a big jump on the ball? And he's like, well, I'm just watching the center's heels, right? He says, it has nothing to do with you. I'm just watching the heels of the center. He, every time before he snaps it, they raise like ever so slightly. And that's how I know when I should go. And whenever he does a hard count, it doesn't happen. And I was like, wow, this guy's on top of the game on a level that, like, you know, I need to get to if I want to be great, right? So I would say DeMarcus Ware was definitely like, probably the full package. Like Vaughn was a beast, but I caught Vaughn like really early before he had like you know, started to put the some of the other skills with the athleticism. But like seeing DeMarcus as like a fully grown Hall of Famer, you know, like was pretty special, I thought. So
gentlemen, I'm sorry to have to be a geek about this, but growing up, this was the offensive line that I grew up watching. So it means a lot to be able to sit here and talk with all of you. One thing that I'm very curious about, as somebody who is still in that senior year of college, even though it's a little different right now with everything going on, what's one thing from all of your college experiences, from walking to an 8 a.m. to celebrating after a win, what's something from college that you still hold on to, or what you would tell a senior in college to make sure they hold on to?
I'm gonna just give a quick one and then give you guys all the time in the world. It's those special moments, eating together, having a meal together. And for us, it was often those pop-ups pizzas moments after games. And there's no real explanation to it. I mean, some good pizza there, nothing crazy, but just, it was just, you know what? That was the place. That was just the place right to be. And for anywhere, that could be your place if you're a senior, especially in 2020. And a lot of it might have to be digital, but find that place and engage in meals together, because that's when you really just learn about other people.
Yeah. For me, it was just about like the people so much. Like, you know, like just being together with like Asper and Ramson and Carson and like Bo Thren and Jordan Holmes and you, Nick, right? And just kind of Ryan Clanton, who was like randomly just benching so much weight. You know, like it was absolutely amazing. And that's what you know, like that's the endearing part of the game, right? It's like, it's the people you meet and it's the time that you have, like you're saying, Nick, it's those meals, right? For me, I really had a joy like doing the putt-putt golf every, like I never won the green jacket, you know, because I was never good enough at putt-putt, but I love going out and just like playing putt-putt with the boys, you know, like every week. That was just like something to look forward to. It's something that bonded us. I remember like in the NFL, we would get together and do like a dinner every Friday or something. I'm sure you guys did the same thing, Asper. And you know, it's just a time when like people get together and you just, you know, you get to talk about like whatever the fuck's going on, you know, how the kids, oh, what's going on there? Oh, that's pretty cool. You know, so, and like, oh, you're terrible at putt-putt, Darian. Like, why, why are you this bad? You know?
Yeah. So yeah, the space between, the time between, I think is what you remember and is what's the most fun, the most precious, all of that stuff, the meetings, the lifting, the between drills, the conversations in the back of the line, like all that stuff is what you end up reminiscing about and holding on to. And I think it's some of it is because it's private, because the game is such a shared experience. It's with everybody. It's with the crowd. It's with the fans. It's with the stadium. It's with your family. But the time betweens behind closed door, the locker room, you know, that's private. That's something that you get to share with each other, with your teammates, that you keep forever, that you don't, that you know, nobody else gets to have. But it's also, I think, you know, that stuff's only enjoyable if you do all the stuff to make, to have, you know, for it to be special, right?
Right.
Because we worked hard, because we put in all the work and we were winning and having fun. Those meals were fun. The getting together and lifting was fun. The putt-putt was fun. All that stuff was fun because we worked our butts off to have the success, so that that time between things was just, it was all just fun. Like, it was, you know, the ice baths and the bull crap that you're at the time, you're like, this is the worst thing ever. And I was like, oh man, I could go for an ice bath with the boys. That'd be a good time.
Not bad, right? Just a little hot cold contrast, you know.
Just music
to my ears.
Taking it back, man. Well, what's crazy, especially I've seen this season, is how important that bond and that development is. And in this 2020 season, you can tell that the Ducks haven't really formed it yet. They have so many young players. They have, you know, an Outland Trophy winner that opted for the NFL, a bunch of DBs that also did the same. This is definitely a team that's lacking a lot of leadership, and we've particularly seen that on road games. You know, it's against Oregon State and Cal. It's just like, you could tell this team hasn't learned it yet. What does it take to develop that culture and that bond with your teammates to be able to learn how to win those road games as a team?
It's so much about the process. The thing that I remember so much about just my time playing sports in general, because now when I look back, it feels like a completely different lifetime, right? Like, it's like something that happened like 1,000 years ago that like I'm amazed I was able to do and take part in, right? But the thing that made all of those things great, it was the process. It was about buying to winning the day, right? Buying to, God, we're going to have to do Fuji after we do Jimmy Rad's warm up. Then we're going to go to boards and shoots. Like, oh, this is going to be brutal. But not, you know, it sucks in the beginning, but then it kind of makes you like a hardened kind of person, because you've gone Fuji, you've gone Rad warm up to Fuji to shoot so many times that, you know, when you're at Tennessee on the road and the crowd's buzzing, the home team is throwing up all over themselves without a place to go. And we're there strong and, you know, ready to compete. And so it's so much about, in my opinion, like buying into the process and buying into the culture. And there has to be a culture set. Like, it's a top-down mentality. I think very much we were a product of what Chip was saying and the people that Chip was bringing in to us to talk to us. So I remember he had the guy, the water, the bamboo guy, right? Is a guy that's constantly in my head, right? And you know, I can't remember what the exact time frame is, but you water a bamboo for however many years, it doesn't grow, then it grows a gajillion feet in 6 months, right? That's not what it is, but that's the premise, right? And also the guy who he had come in and talk to us about going to sleep, or at least being in bed, right, by 10:30. I actually did that, right? I went from a guy who was like partying all the time, like chasing, you know, that stuff, to like, you know what, I should lay down. It's like 10:34, you know, let me get
it. Almost say, Darren, you were reading your life manual at the time. Do you remember these bad boys?
Wow.
We've been busting this out on the show all season, pulling quotes. And I'm telling you, you're right. Wow. You're still right. It still holds up today. It's not a gazillion years on the bamboo or whatever, but I'll double check the research on that.
Yeah. Unvetted. Definitely going to have to get that thing peer reviewed, right?
You know what happens when you water bamboo for a year? Nothing. You know what happens when you water bamboo for 2 years? Nothing. You know what happens when you water bamboo for 3 years? Nothing. But that fourth year, it'll grow 6 feet in 4 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
So the road warrior mentality is something that, yeah, you have to, it has to be built. It has to be created. I think some of it is just, it's confidence. It's that confidence, no matter where you go and where you're playing. It's believing that you have something, whatever it was, that in the buy-in, that you have something that they can't stop, or that no matter what, they're not going to be able to handle. I remember the first like crazy, you know, the like road swag game was when I was a true freshman, and the guys were prepping to go to Michigan to play that game. And, you know, Chip had been there. He was the OC. He was doing his thing. And it was like, you know, it was kind of like, they don't even know, guys. Like, they don't even know what we're bringing. Like, we were just stupid confident and just had that, like, no, this is what's going to happen. This is what we're going to do. And they went in there and did that. I remember my freshman, that next year when I was playing a little bit, I remember feeling that confidence for home games, absolutely. But I remember distinctly, like, we were banging on some teams and we were like, oh, okay, we might be able to put together a special season. And I remember we went to SC and we'd beat them at our place the year previous. We went to SC and I remember the feeling of, oh shoot, we're going to get, like, I just felt it. I didn't like that feeling, that vibe, like, oh, we're good. Like, we're prepared. We're prepared more than these people. We practiced harder. We've done more reps. Like, we've got more than they got. But I remember going and rolling out on that, rolling out in SC that game, and just feeling like, oh shoot, we're going to get handed. Like, that confidence wasn't there. And then just believing in the process and doing that and believing that your preparation was better and more than the people that you were going up against. It didn't matter that it was in their place. It was like, we're going to do what we do and you can't stop it. That confidence, and that it is, you know, like Darian said, I believe it is, you know, it trickles top down, having the coaching staff that has a plan and a purpose and you know, a vision, or, you know, they're able to instill that, get that buy-in from the guys to where they're just like, nope, doesn't matter where we play, you can't stop us. And that confidence, I think, is what, you know, they say young teams, they lack experience. I think it's just that confidence.
Just a little bit of swag, huh, Mark?
Yeah, it's that, you know, and, you know, Cliff Harris, wherever he's at and whatever he's doing, I hope he's well, you know. A lot of he was nuts, but I loved that unbridled nacho cheese swag that he had, man. Just,
yes,
crazy.
It oozed over, you know.
Well, Mark, you just talked about an experience with USC a little bit, but with USC being Oregon's opponent this week for the Pac-12 championship game, we thought it'd be right just to ask all of you, if you had any special memories, anything that comes up, particularly when you think of the USC Trojans and playing against them.
I come from like a USC household, more or less, right? So it was all the games were special to me. My best friend went to USC, right? So all of them were special to me. You know, I got to pancake them up in Eugene that year. We hung a whole, we ran power 50 times or whatever it was, right? And you Halloween. Know, yes, for Halloween. I just remember going home after that game and my shoulders were just like, just vibrating with so much pain, right? But it was every game to me was just like a special time and a special game. I remember going there in the all whites kind of, I can't remember what year that was. Maybe it was my redshirt junior year. That just felt special. And you know, the season was building and there was a lot of buzz and, you know, we had the all white unis on and it just felt good, you know, and we went out and we hung one on them. So every time to me, all of them are special.
You want me to go next, Nick, or do you got one?
Hey, man, you go ahead first. I got one. I still got one you old fogies don't have, so.
Right. So yeah, I remember that one with the all whites, because I know that D Weems got to start that game because your boy here, I was on dad duty one night and I overslept, so I was late to meetings, and they were like, well, you're gonna ride the pine, and Darian balled out that week of practice, and they're like, you know what, we're gonna go down to SoCal, we're gonna put D Weems out there starting right tackle, because the Thranimal was starting left tackle, and you went out there and balled out in the, I just remember watching you those first couple series out there. Yeah, you were a man possessed, because I knew you were SC country homeboy, so I knew that. I was like, oh, they don't even know, like that's gasoline on the fire, putting him, letting D Weems start that game. It was awesome to watch. I remember the my dicks in your booty
classic reference.
My freshman year when we banged on them, when they had their entire starting defense ended up in the league, like our defense ended up in the league, and I just remember loving that game and Jonathan Stewart doing his thing and Dennis doing his thing. And then that game where we did our best, but it was kind of like a revenge match for them. And then Halloween night, what was that? They had this hot shot safety.
Taylor Mays.
Yeah.
Who was supposed to, he was like, Mel Kiper, top draft board, first day, first top five round pick, dude. Had to come back. And I think that game against us, like, single-handedly cost that dude money, because, yeah, we'd run that power, and it was his job to fill. And I remember watching you latch up and pancake his butt. I did it a couple of times, and I was just like, oh, sorry, homie.
Our bad,
man.
Our bad. And I just remember banging on. Just I loved getting what was his name? The blonde quarterback. He's with the. He's the
Liner? No, not what's his name? The guy that deflated the ball.
Pretty boy, blonde hair. Baker, Barker.
Barkley, Matt Barkley.
Matt Barkley.
That's it. Yeah.
He was so California, so LA, the blonde hair and the whole bit. I love just crushing his little hopes.
So that's what I loved about at least my senior year. I didn't get the start down there, but I played a ton in that USC game where it was kind of a one of many coming out parties for Marcus Mariota. And man, Kenyon still scoring touchdowns on that defense that year. It was like 400, 500 yards. And man, it was every time you pulled, they were trying to fill the linebacker so hard. He was taking himself out of the play. And as soon as he tried to turn back in, and I wasn't a big pancake stacker, but I had myself a couple stacks that day.
That's awesome. Ooh,
do we have, you know what you should get, Nick? You should find a way to get the pancake boards from one of the years and just put it in the back, you know?
I should.
That would be a great addition to you.
The old blood sport poster I should recreate too.
Yes.
Or in Ramson's honor.
Me and Ramson still talk about that, like that energy, you know, the energy of blood sport in the meeting room to this day, because he comes over and works out sometimes.
Please, for the people of Wantseduc, describe what that is if you can.
I don't even know if I can synthesize it. Like, it was such a strange, like, I forgot what happened, but early in the year,
It was an organic birth. It was that we were in like training camp, mm-hmm. and TBS or TNT was running like blood sport like every night. And so, there's not much to do. So I think we all like collectively at one point or another for like a week, every single person watched blood sport because it was on like every other day, right? Every time you put the TV on, it was like, oh, blood sport. Oh, catch a little bit of this. And I think Ramson or even Alex Miller might have been the one that started talking about it and was just like, you guys don't even know about blood sport. And we're like, we know about blood sport, bro. Denmark, death touch. Like, get out of here.
Not the Denmark.
And then it just kind of like, it was just organic. It wasn't forced. That was the best part about it, is it wasn't like a coach coming in there and being like, we're going to be about blood sport, we're out there to take lives and we're gonna you know, the training and that whole mantra of resorting to your training when he was blind, and just, it just fit so much into what we were about. And it just happened. It wasn't forced. It just, everybody just kind of like, yeah, all right.
And then somehow, some way on Sunday or Monday, you'd see it in the film room and you just know it was meant to be that Finucane death punch. You're like, Dimmock.
One punch where you punch a guy and he just drops.
What a great, like, Mark, you're right. Like, it was so organic and it was so indicative of like who we were as a team at that time, you know, like it was so organic. Like, it just happened and all of a sudden we were it was the year of you know, the Denmark, and it was the year of Bloodsport, which was amazing. Like, I love that.
Oh man, you gotta know. Oh man, you know Mario Cristobal's down with some Denmark there. He's probably forcing it a little bit less organically, but you know that might be on every Thursday.
Should be, man. Should be. Just like Van Damme, like squinting.
Brick don't punch back. Brick don't fight back.
Bottom
brick. Yes.
Bottom yes. Brick.
Man,
and that fits, and it just fit in with, you know, with, you know, speaking of offensive line, go back to our first idea about offensive linemen being clones and us all being kind of the same human being. That's just, that fits right into what big fat offensive linemen are about. Sit around, watch movies, and then hang around with your buddies later and quote movies.
Yes, 100%.
Hell yeah. 100%. That was us.
Once a duck, always a duck.
Oh, man. Well, no. Shit. On that note, guys, I mean, that went places I wasn't necessarily expecting it. You know, I was going to try and bring it back somehow to this game, talk about Oregon's team this year, but I think that's the note we should just leave it on right there. The Denmark in the old O-line meeting room, you know, they're now headquartered up there in the Death Star, and you know, they probably don't have to make their own pancake boards anymore, but you know what, I'm sure they'll still appreciate us sharing this, and thank you guys for coming on and technically coming back on. We have to make sure people go and check out your previous appearances on the show.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me on. Mark, it's great to see you. Next time I'm driving to Yellowstone, I'm going to hit you up. I'm coming through the Bonneville Bees. We're going to show Mari what it's all about.
Come on through. You're always welcome.
Appreciate you, man. Much love.
Yep.
Nick, you too, man.
Anytime, dude. Thanks, guys. Once a duck, always a duck, baby.
Yeah.
Wow. We weren't quite sure what to expect with two guests, but I definitely did not expect us to go all the way back straight to the meeting room, the offensive line, and talk blood sport. Sam, what's your takeaway there?
Man, just to be a fly on the wall for that conversation was so much fun. That's the offensive line that I know I grew up watching, and so many Duck fans grew up watching. So being able to see all of you reconnect was really special.
Yeah, and I definitely want to give Darian his own show, because we brought him on for, you know, our happy hour that we did a couple months ago, and we need to repeat again someday. But, you know, he really deserves his own episode. He's a great guy, and Mark is one of our favorite and most requested alumni guests that we were able to bring back on and surprise Darian with. So it was a lot of fun, and oh boy, we talked about some stuff you aren't going to get in any other Duck podcast.
Yeah, Nick, That's what I appreciate so much about being able to do this show, is just hearing some of these stories that you wouldn't really be able to hear anywhere else. It's so exciting being able to hear Mark talk about being on dad duty and missing meetings. Darian talking about just being able to really get out all that aggression he had and get it out on USC that same game is just such a fun thing to hear about. Log on and check out At Once a Duck on YouTube, and you can see all of our interviews, all of the fun stories we get with players. Stories like this aren't unusual. We get this all the time, and it's just so much fun to be able to hear from former Oregon athletes like we're able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on that note, we brought Mark on particularly because last year he was our special luck charm for a certain conference championship game, and we're hoping to strike lucky again here, folks. But this time, we've got a much different opponent. I think last year, as we talked about Utah, going into that game, there was a lot of uncertainty, and this year, even more uncertainty. We're looking at a USC team that's another one of the top offenses in the Pac-12. And, you know, this year they're undefeated 5-0, and you know, I would say untested until mostly, you know, last week when it looked like UCLA was really giving them some fits.
Yeah, UCLA did play USC very, very well. I was surprised to see Chip and the guys play a game that close. The final score was 43-38. It was a great ball game. USC, they've definitely been pushed at times this year. Arizona and Arizona State specifically both made that a one-score ball game with the Trojans. I really am excited to see what Oregon's able to do. I'm not sure that this game – I don't feel as confident as I have in games past, and I think that's clear just from the opponent, from who Oregon's placing, from how we're speaking about it. We understand this is going to be a really tough game for the Ducks, but as we get into our scores and predictions – I think that we both expect it's something that Oregon can do.
Yeah, and just quick keys of the game. I think one of the biggest reasons UCLA was able to keep that game so close and really kind of set the tone for a lot of that game was they were able to get a lot of pressure up front with that talented defensive line, and I would really love to see a coming out party for the defensive line of the Ducks in this game.
I would as well. I would love to be able to see Kayvon Thibodeau, Jordan Scott, Andrew and Austin Value, both of them, be able to see some of these guys get to the quarterback a little bit, cause some problems. And something else we mentioned earlier, getting tackles in the backfield is going to be huge. Finishing off these tackles is going to be a really big key to this game. Also, the run game, getting guys like CJ Verdell, Travis Scott, Dye, getting them ready to roll early is going to be huge for this ball game. Nick, it's time for our scores. USC, Oregon, Friday night, 5 p.m. on Fox. What's happening?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is whenever you go in and play USC at USC, you're going to be challenged on discipline. And USC is going to come out. They're going to get in your face. They're going to be loud. And it's going to test whether this team has really shored up some of those penalties we've seen in the past couple weeks. And if they're really bringing their own juice and if they're not going to let USC kind of talk themselves up. So I really think if Oregon comes out and just has an offense that just continues to eat up yards like it has most of the season, leading in the Pac-12 in yardage, and just doesn't turn the ball over, we could frustrate USC into their own mistakes. And I don't see, you know, this being a big defensive ball game unless the lack of preparation for both teams really becomes a factor. So I think I'm going to stick to a lot of the averages this year, and I'm going to say Oregon 40 and let's go USC 35.
I've got an incredibly similar score that I actually wrote down before we started this, just so that I would know that I wasn't taking anything you were saying. I've got 38-34 Oregon. I think that the Ducks are going to win this game because the defense is going to show up in the red zone a couple of times, force a couple field goals where USC would prefer to get touchdowns. I think that's going to be the difference in this ballgame.
Yeah, I could definitely see it. And, you know, I'm just excited to see whatever happens. It's another opportunity to play football. When we sat down and recorded last week, we weren't necessarily sure if that opportunity came, what it was going to be. And, you know, this is the best possible game the Ducks can be in. All we could have asked for at the beginning of this season. And here we are, baby. Everything on the line against USC. And you know what? I'll go into battle with this squad any day because once a Duck, always a Duck, baby.